The Last Word with Matt Cooper on Today FM.
We have Larissa Nolan and John Cadell to talk about all music issues. We just had Ian Guider talking about the business rationale behind Apple ditching iTunes. But I first find it quite extraordinary that it is nearly 20 years old, but it actually transformed the way that people bought and listened to music. And now the way the speed at which technology moves, it itself has become almost redundant. Mm. That's extraordinary.
Pop Will Eat Itself, isn't that the name of a band from the 80s? Yeah, I mean, iTunes was the first time that all the major record labels agreed to one model of pricing, and it took Apple and Steve Jobs to do it. Because they had tried and failed in fighting, but Jobs said, yeah, let me do it. And basically, he and Apple reaped the profits of that, that the major labels could not get their heads together to organise. But yeah, it's about like who buys MP3s now. I don't know anybody who...
Isn't it amazing though that, you know, the MP3s were exactly such a thing.
Yeah.
And the iPod originally, when it came out, was just this phenomenal thing to have. Unfortunately, I lost my iPod when I was travelling about 15 years ago. Never replaced it because suddenly, well, it wouldn't even have been 15 years ago, probably 10 years ago, because suddenly you could put all your music on your phone.
On your phone, yeah.
And it was more convenient. But I would have loved to have actually kept the iPod. But now it's just a redundant,
I have my first iPod. It was a 5 gig. And it was very expensive. I literally treated myself. It was about 500.
I think I must have been the same on mine, yeah.
And it was clunky and it was big and the screen was just green with black writing on it. It was very sort of
It was regarded as a thing of beauty at the time,
absolutely,
not as clunky.
Yeah,
and actually there was a solidity to it. I mean, there was actually something that you felt that there was real value in this brick.
And you were also recommended not to use the white earplugs because they said people will know you have an iPod and you will be mugged. So you were told to just use regular headphones.
Well, I'm totally confused by this whole conversation because my iPod is currently nestling in my handbag beside me here.
You still have one?
I never leave the house without
my iPod.
That's
a collector's item. Now, that's probably very valuable. You better get quick security
for
you
as you leave
the building.
I've got two of them in case I go out without one of them. So then I have the other one then at home because I use it all the time and it's probably the most technologically forward I've ever reached. So I still have it. There's not a street that I walk down, we were talking about this before, without a soundtrack in my head, or it'd drive me mad if I was in the gym and I didn't have it or doing something like that. So for me, like, other people download the stuff onto it for me, by the way. I am that in the 90s. But other than that, so I still use my iPod and I can't imagine. I didn't know that other people weren't doing this anymore. The only problems with them is that they're so small. You know, it's so easy to lose. As you were saying, you lost yours, and then they're very, very expensive to replace. You know, I think they're...
Well, it's just the same as losing a phone. I can't imagine it's any more different.
But why would you want to have your music?
Phone, yeah.
I don't know why you'd want to have your music on your phone. I love the fact that the two things are completely separate because it's like, right, put that thing away now and I can listen to my iPod completely uninterrupted. No one's going to ring in the middle of a song and interrupt me listening to it. But apart from that, the only way I buy music is actually by buying the CD.
Yeah, see, I was actually being mocked today by my production team because I actually still use iTunes, but I actually use the library service.
Yeah.
I stream. So I can't remember when I last bought music, and I used to buy music via iTunes and download it, and then I would use Wi-Fi or Bluetooth or whatever to go through the various speakers in the house. Now I stream, I pay monthly from Apple, but it's effective. But it's still on iTunes. It's still as iTunes on my laptop.
I didn't like that. I'm enough of a geek that like I have my entire music library ripped into iTunes. But I didn't like that when I had an Apple Music subscription that it could infiltrate my library and that some of the songs in my library wouldn't be stuff that I owned. I'm really like that. So I gave up the Apple Music subscription and for streaming, I
use
Spotify.
Do you mean someone else was curating your music collection?
No, it's just like they were all mixed into one and I was like, I don't like this streaming versus... I like whatever I have on iTunes, I know I own. Because I've bought it, everything, and I'm talking about ripping CDs.
And you can see, and you have a whole CD, and you have it 1 to 12 or 1 to 15, and just go in the track order or whatever
and
you want.
That's my music library digitized, as far as I'm concerned, and Spotify for streaming that.
I presume those shelves of yours with actual CDs in them, John, they're alphabetically ordered.
But actually,
there is
a problem that I see with streaming, and that in a sense is that if you ever can't afford to continue a streaming service or good stuff, suddenly all this music that I listen to that I don't actually own anymore.
Yeah.
In fact, I don't think I've bought music in years.
Oh.
So you have all the music.
You're no friend of mine, Cooper.
Yeah, but you know what I mean? I'm streaming it all the time. I'm paying whatever it is for Apple Family Play or whatever, and so the kids are listening as well. So you actually have all this music that you come to know of, but actually you might discover that if you ever decided to get rid of the Apple thing and go to Spotify, you don't have it all.
Well, see, here's the thing.
For you.
This is why people were up in arms when the news came out that Apple were killing iTunes. And just to make it clear, they're not killing your music collection. If you've bought stuff on iTunes, it'll still be there, but they'll just revamp the app as Apple Music. It'll all be called Apple Music now. So they're not killing iTunes and taking all the stuff that you've uploaded onto it. It's just going to be they're stripping it into three different apps. Simple as that. So it's not really going anywhere. It's just becoming three separate things.
Yeah.
For those people who are still worried.
Well, I think it's there's a quote there from someone in iTunes saying there's no reason for iTunes to exist, period. And I think things like that maybe are making people say, well, what's going on? They're getting rid of the whole thing. Well, but it's not quite that simple.
No, I mean, if you want a new album, you either go into a record store and buy it, or you go to your streaming service and stream it. Nobody is buying MP3 albums anymore. They're just not.
Listener says, iPod Classic, 160 grams. I have 30G, which is a month's listening plus battery life of 2 weeks, says Barry, still at it. Caroline and Claire says, I had a U2 iPod, U2 edition iPod.
For red.
I must go and have a look for it. I wonder how many people have actually misplaced their iPods and actually now have no idea where they are.
I know where mine is, but I just don't use it anymore because Spotify is on the phone.
I bought a 2 gig iPod Nano in the US 15 years ago. Now everything has gone onto the phone.
Yeah, I had a 5 gig first generation iPod and it was clunky. It was like a brick and it was brilliant.
I just don't like this idea of being completely reliant on your phone like that.
Gary in Longford says, you're all dinosaurs. Everybody listens to records these days. Yeah. Streaming is so old fashioned. Get a record player playing vinyl. Yeah, that's what everyone else is doing. Like, I know both of you play vinyl.
That's a given,
don't you?
That's a given, yeah, completely.
Another one. What was the last CD you bought? Just out of interest. Mine was a great newish band called The Struts. Great English glam band, John. In particular, might enjoy it, says this listener.
Right, The Struts. Oh, hang on, I know of them. Yes, I've heard of them. Yeah, Classic Rock magazine cover them a fair bit.
What was the last one you bought?
The last CD.
Good question.
The last CD I bought. Oh God, I don't know. I think it might have been TLC's Greatest Hits a couple of weeks ago.
I think Fontaine's DC's album.
You bought that as a CD?
Yeah, because I wanted to see the cover and the lyrics and everything.
Yeah, well, funny you should say that. I mean, that's one thing I always felt was a bit of a cheat in the CDs. I loved the old albums, the beautiful design on the covers. And I also loved the fact when you could take out the inside and the, which had all the lyrics of your favorite. And I used to feel so cheated occasionally. You would buy an album and expect to have...
It'd be a white bag.
And it'd be a white bag.
And you're going,
the bastards didn't actually send to Ireland the inside, like, the inlay thing with the lyrics on it.
If you had Adam and the Ants, Prince Charming album, it was fabulous. It was a big gatefold sleeve. And then the inside had all the lyrics in on the yellow paper. It was brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. And of course, it was half the thrill listening to the album. But anyway, I digress.
Let's move on to the big albums coming up this week. Well, not albums, big concerts coming up this week. Of course, we have Slain. And of course, we have this magnificent track by Metallica, Enter Sandman. That's one of my all-time favourite bits of music.
Incredible.
I have a friend whose 17-year-old son is dying to go to this at the weekend. There's a younger generation massively into it. That said, I have a 16-year-old daughter who's had a cracking piece of music ruined by the vocals. There you go. I sort of looked at her shocked.
Yeah.
Speechless.
And rightly so. Yeah, Hetfield's growl is Metallica, really.
Yeah. But they have this lovely international feel to them. That's what I love about them. You know, Kirk Hammett was American and his mother was Filipino. And then you had Lars Ulrich, who was Danish,
Swedish, a Danish tennis player.
I mean, I love as well, I think they owe a lot to Thin Lizzy, that classic rock of Thin Lizzy. And I know James Hetfield was a huge fan of Thin Lizzy and Phil Lynott. As well as that, the lovely choppy guitar and the way it takes off. You know that bit where we all knew where it was going to just soar at some stage. They're just such a classic rock band. A metal band, of course, but do you remember And Justice for All being released?
Yes.
And that, like, I mean, people talk about Nirvana changing music and various different bands, but for me, hearing that album, that for me changed music as I knew it at the time. Now, when I listen back, maybe not so much, but I mean, there are some brilliant songs in it, like One and Blackened and things like that. Yeah. But it was a really, I think it was a really, an album that changed music for me. I love their earlier, I love their earlier stuff.
I don't know anyone who's going to Slane. I usually do, but I mean, The Cure on the same night.
We'll get to The Cure in a second, because I want to use the opportunity just to play something a bit softer by Metallica. Nothing Else Matters. So close to the heart, couldn't be much more than the heart. Forever trusting who you are. And nothing else matters.
That's Metallica with added strings. You know, that's where they changed then there from. Like, you know, when you think about the Hetfield growl, that is a, and he was actually singing there. So if you listen back compared to, say, Kill 'Em All or Master of Puppets, which were brilliant, but then they could change and do this lovely orchestral sound. I mean, they always had that ability there in the background.
Yeah.
I think that's what made them such a good band, that musicality.
And of course, still people can't believe that, whether it's scheduling issues or whatever, Metallica are on at Slane on the same day as this band are playing Balahide Castle, The Cure, In Between Day. People dancing to that.
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's so many different versions of The Cure. That was when they were pop imperialists. So it was the head in the door, and then they had Kiss Me, Kiss Me, Kiss Me. And then a complete 180 with Disintegration in 89, which probably remains their greatest album.
Yeah, would get my vote.
Yeah.
Although I love another album, an earlier album of theirs. Actually, the one that's 40 years old, Three Imaginary Boys, is a brilliant album. Really brilliant. But the one I loved, and I don't know whether it was my age or something, was Pornography. And it was like, people call it a dismal classic. Like, it's nothing like Pornography, but it's absolutely brilliant. I mean, there's one line in it where he goes, "Freshly squashed fly," and you're just like, only Robert Smith would put that in an album.
How many years old did you just say there, one of the albums?
Three Imaginary Boys is from 1979.
Yeah. 40 years ago.
Yeah. That was their first album, I think. That was their first
album. Yeah, it was. There was, it was a US version as well, but that's very geeky.
Yeah.
Pornography was the first part of what Smith calls a trilogy, Disintegration being the second part and Bloodflowers being the third.
Yes, and they do all match, actually. Mm. And you could match them all together and listen to them together. But I think a bit like, you know, the way Kate Bush reached a peak with Hounds of Love, I do think they reached a peak with Disintegration. It's an album that can still be listened to again and again and again years
and
later.
I believe on certain dates of the tour, if not all, they're playing the album in full. And then, I don't want to give away any spoilers, but suffice to say, if you're a fan of the hit singles, you will not be disappointed by The Cure's set.
Hey, John, you and I should have known this, but listener Kevin WhatsApps in to say that Dave from Dermot and Dave, our very own Dermot and Dave, is going to Slane.
Right.
There is somebody we know who's going to Slane. Yeah. I know other people going to Slane as well. Some interesting comments coming in. Derek says, they recently upgraded my laptop at work. All good except for one thing. No CD player on it.
Yeah.
I got for Spotify, although there's something great about having the thing in your hand and being able to read the album notes, the artwork, etc.
I got a Mac for a significant birthday present and there was no CD drive and I had to buy an external CD drive to rip CDs to my iTunes.
Well, I wonder if they're going to do that in cars. Like, my car is too old to know this, but I love listening to music in the car and I don't want to bring around something with me. I just want to grab my CD off the shelf.
You don't get CDs in new cars anymore.
Do you not? No. See, my car is so ancient I wouldn't have a clue.
No, you don't.
But, but I love listening to CDs in my car. Mm. Bringing them with me and the whole tradition
of
it.
You just have to listen to radio. Other gigs that are on also in Malahide Castle. Snow Patrol. Let's hear a bit of Chocolate. Enjoy a lot of Snow Patrol stuff. Yeah. A lot of people are a bit snobbish about Snow Patrol, but they're a damn good band.
They can certainly write a hit single, that's for sure.
You look like one of those people. Larissa's going to be one of the people who's snobbish about Snow Patrol.
I can't stand Snow Patrol, and I actually really hate saying that because I understand that they're lovely people and really nice and everything like that. So I don't like saying that. I know that I shouldn't care about that. But
you've said it now, so carry on.
They've always driven me, like they actually irritate me. And things like Chasing Cars, it's like, oh God, a kind of sub Adele before Adele precursor does nothing for me. It's just I've always heard them and I've had to immediately turn off the radio or just get it out of my ears. I like, do you know that band Sebado who I picked last week as my track of the week?
Yeah.
It's like they had a great album called Pharmacy and then suddenly, you know, Snow Patrol came out with this sort of really weak version of Sebado's stuff and I haven't been able to stand them. I really, really can't imagine who'd go and see them. Maybe you guys.
Well, they're playing Malahide Castle, aren't they?
It's huge. Yeah, like, who's going to go? I think it's going to be half empty.
No, it won't.
No, it'll
maybe there'll be taxis. The last time I went to Malahide Castle, I wasn't home till 7 o'clock in the morning because there was a really, really bad transport mess up. So
that
hopefully
excuse,
that will never happen
it?
Again. No, honestly, I was standing in the road for hours and I nearly ended up walking home from Malahide. It was really bad. So hopefully they don't do that this time, this summer.
Well, I was talking to Fergal Darcy and he was up with Gary Lightbody yesterday. On his day off, and he went and did an interview with Gary, which is going to be airing on the show tomorrow. His only Irish radio interview in advance.
Very good. What time will that be on tomorrow?
Well, from 2:00. I think there's going to be a Snow Patrol special from 3:00.
Very good. Yeah. Okay, that's good. Well, we'll be listening to it, even if Larissa isn't listening to it.
Too snobby.
I tell you, if you're snobby about Snow Patrol, how do you feel about Michael Bublé, who's doing a couple of nights in the 3 Arena this week?
I actually love Michael Bublé.
Ah,
I love Michael Bublé because he's a great singer and he doesn't pretend to be anything that he's not. I mean, we know what Michael Bublé is, and
it's impossible not to like him as a person.
Yeah, I mean, and also he's a great entertainer and he's a great performer. He writes his own songs as well.
Didn't
that's brilliant.
He do Outdoor last year, didn't he?
He was in
Park
the Aviva or something a few years back, wasn't he?
Yeah.
But you know, people think he's just a cover versions guy. But he just didn't. Just Haven't Met You Yet is a great song.
Yeah.
It's a classic.
Home is a great song.
Yeah, he's brilliant. I think he's a great writer.
Well,
and
of course,
great singer.
We just happen to have him doing a cover version, Van Morrison's Moondance.
Well, it's a marvelous night for a moon dance with the stars up above in your eyes. fantabulous night to make romance neath the cover of October skies. And all the leaves on the trees are falling to the sound of the breezes that blow. And I'm trying to please to the calling of your heartstrings that play soft and low. And all the night's magic seems to whisper and hush. And all the soft moonlight seems to shine in your blush. Can I just have one more moon dance with you, my love? Can I just make some more romance with you, my love?
Okay, is that not just too sanitized?
Well, I just can't hear Moon Dance without thinking of Van Morrison's original. And, you know, there's some songs that I think are so tied to their original creators that they just don't lend themselves to cover versions.
I think he sounds passionate, though. He always sounds really passionate, whatever he does. And you can hear that there. But he also sounds like he's naturally auto-tuned. It's a marvelous night for a moon dance. He doesn't he? He's like the natural auto-tune guy.
But I do like his voice.
Yeah, it's powerful.
Yeah.
All right. You want to talk about a new documentary, and this is about the life of Michael Hutchins of In Excess. Before you do so, let's hear some of the trailer for Mystify.
The experience that we go through in doing what we do is many lifetimes. The problem is holding on to a fixed point for long enough to understand it.
You know when there's one person in the room that has a special light, that was him.
He was the complete package.
And everyone wanted a piece of him.
Michael always had that aura about him.
If you're a sensual being, all of your senses need stimulation. A lot of it was based around pleasure, let's face it.
I don't like the idea of golf. I don't like the idea of success.
He actually wanted to be an artist.
I think it confused him whether he wanted to take on being Michael Hutchins.
It started to take its toll on him.
We were riding home on our bikes. This insane taxi driver got out of his car and punched him.
And right from the get-go, Michael was kind of different. I just felt this incredible, overwhelming sense of sadness. This is not the Michael that I know.
Yeah, Michael Hutchins. Mystify is coming out on, it's going to be broadcast by the BBC, date yet to be confirmed. But this has been in the works for at least 2 years. It's his life story, and the various members of In Excess are interviewed. That was Kylie Minogue you heard talking about him being passionate. Helena Christensen, his family, so everybody's on board. So this isn't any muckraking documentary. This is the real deal.
What age was he when he died?
37.
That all?
37, yeah. And people say he's like, you know, he's like Jim Morrison of the 80s. And he was, to a certain extent. He was, you know, he was in love with sex. Mm. And he was in love with performing on stage. But he was naturally very quiet. And when he hooked up with Geldof's wife, of course, that was the angle. You know, who takes Sir Bob's wife? You know, the paparazzi just followed them everywhere. And it's true, he was punched by a paparazzo and lost his sense of smell. And the punch and the fallout from that actually changed his personality. They said that he became a lot nastier and a lot more sort of single-minded than he had been, and a lot more unhappy than he had been, because he was, you know, if you saw him throughout the 80s and 90s, he was always sort of had this wry sort of smile, sort of a Lothario, and, you know, very, very you couldn't take your eyes off him on stage. But this apparently took a lot of the fun out of his state of mind and just the way he used to interact.
So he got angry then, obviously, but the injustice of it, maybe, and it changed.
I don't know what it was, but they say it fundamentally changed the type of person he became.
Yeah.
But the reason I wanted to bring him up is because I think he should be in the pantheon of great front men, and he isn't. And part of the reason I think he isn't is because they always focused on his looks.
This is it.
How dreamy Michael Hutchins was, and how, you know, how sexy he was.
Absolutely.
But him and Andrew Farris wrote all of In Excess's massive hits. I mean, the guy was a huge talent. But like you mentioned, Michael Hutchins, and one of the first things people talk about is how good looking
John,
he was.
Yeah. I'm only putting this is maybe a cruel one to put to you. In Excess were an overrated pop band, according to a listener. If he didn't die, they'd be doing retro 80s gigs around Europe now.
I think what happened is that he did die and they tried to replace him and couldn't and ended up supporting Matchbox 20 in their home country.
Listen, we don't have time to play any clips from your picks of the week. We've run out of time, unbelievably, going to be started early. Mm-hmm. Just give us your picks of the week, though, if people want to look for them.
So I'm picking the Pixies on Graveyard Hill, which is from their new album, Beneath the Eyrie, which I hope is better than the last two albums that they have recorded, which were disappointing.
What's yours?
Well, because I'm a parody of myself, I'm going for the new massive box set of Bob Dylan's Rolling Thunder Review Tour from 1975. That's 14 discs of prime 70s Bob.
And I'm going to finish with a comment from a listener who says, Buble is like karaoke. Just because you have a good voice doesn't mean you should sing.
Oh, gee, I think he's more like Galaxy Bar, isn't he? Smooth and enjoyable.
Fair enough. Okay, John Cadell, Larissa Nolan, thank you very much for joining us here on the programme this evening.
The Last Word with Matt Cooper on Today FM.